Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting...
Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis!
Clank.
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Lots going on in sports today. I mean, we've had some crazy upsets in football, and we've also had some crazy excitement in baseball in the postseason. So we will be covering all of that tonight on our Football Picks program. Our thanks to Chris and Georgia for coming on last week and doing the picks. You know, it was certainly a lot of fun chatting football with him. We do have a lot to break down this time around. I mean, the landscape of football is changing. And I tell you, this season reminds me a lot of 10 years ago where the number one team was changing every week. Now, this is not quite that severe. In the sense that the number one team has been the same the entire season. It's been Bama. But everybody else, I mean, nobody's safe. Clemson lost on Thursday. Washington State lost. Was that Thursday? I think that might have been Friday. Okay. Clemson lost on Friday. Washington State also lost on Friday. Auburn loses on Saturday. And then Washington loses late in the evening on Saturday in Tempe. So four out of the top 10 lose on that weekend. You could have even had another contender in the Pac-12 losing with USC. They were very, very fortunate to get out of there with a comeback win against Utah. But it has certainly been a lot of excitement in college football and in the pros. Similar stuff. You had a lot of craziness there. Big, in fact, probably crippling and devastating injury. And we'll get to that when we get to our NFL portion of our program. Much to talk about there. We have a lot to come here, and we're just waiting on one more caller as we introduce our next series of picks. We have a guest picker, but the guest picker will be sending the picks via the text tonight, and that would be our friend John in Stamford, who you all know as Yachts. So Yachts will be sending in the picks via the text. Everyone else will be here on the line with us. So we put everything on the table. We've got upsets galore. I mean, you don't know who is going to be the top dog in each conference from week to week. But or at least you don't know who's going to be in the playoff because that's changing all the time. But I tell you, here's the thing. There's still a lot to play for a lot of these teams, even the ones that lost. And in the NFL, same thing. It is wide open. But you talk about a week in which you had a lot of craziness. The craziness continued in the NFL as we count down to a showdown between last year's Super Bowl participants. It is a lot of marbles that we are playing for this time around. So with the college and the NFL, there's there's certainly still much juice to be had. Let's hit it. Football picks week 8, and talk about juice. We got a lot of competition here in this year's contest. And let's give it up to our guest picker, Chris in Georgia. He went 4-0 last week. That's spectacular. But of the regulars, John in Connecticut with a big rebound week, he went 3-1. And everybody else, even Steven at 2-2. No losing weeks. No losing weeks from anyone. So the standings are pretty close to where they were last week. Ron is in first place, holding steady at 15-11. That's tied with Dave, me at 15-11. Andy is just behind at 13-13. And John is in last place at 10-16. But with a big win last week in the picks. So again, guest picks with Chris and George's remarkable run are 17-9 this season. So the bar is set by the guest pickers, and we'll see if Yachts can continue to build upon that this week. So a lot of stuff going on in sports. It's also NBA's opening night, a much earlier opening night than normal this year, and this is the way it's going to be. It's an effort to increase the amount of rest between games so you don't have guys tanking games and throwing series and resting like half the bench. You know, it's all part of what the NBA is trying to do to make the league a little bit more competitive. I endorse it because
I think it was getting a little ridiculous when you had guys playing four games in five days every week. It was just getting nuts. So let's get back and enjoy a little bit of that. And in the background, we look at the Dodgers with the early lead on the Cubs in the fourth inning. And we look at a remarkable Yankees comeback against the Houston Astros. Who would have guessed it? Up 4-0. The Astros go on to blow the game against the Bronx Baby Bombers in the seventh and the eighth innings. Just something to see. Actually, I think it was maybe the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings they made that comeback. It was really something. It was crazy. So let's go and get our panel into the mix. We will talk baseball in the middle of our program between the college and NFL portions of our show. So let's get right to it. We first start with our friend Ron in New Jersey, back at it with us. Ron, welcome to the program again. How's it going tonight?
Dave, nobody saw the Yankees comeback. Nobody saw the Astros losing. I fucking called it. Everybody with half a brain fucking called it. The Astros suck. MJ Hinch is a fucking pussy. How do you fucking not walk Aaron Judge with the first base open, you idiot? How do you put it? Any team, how the fuck did the Astros get to the playoffs with Joe Musgrave as your eighth inning guy? I mean, Jesus Christ, if you didn't see that coming from a mile away. My God, Dave, one of the easiest things to spot was that Yankee comeback, and the win tomorrow, fucking Tanaka will come out of the woodwork and pitch a nine-inning shutout, and Yankees are going to the World Series and winning it all. I am sick to my stomach, Dave. Sick.
Wow, Ron salty tonight. Yeah, this just happened just about an hour ago, so understandably, I mean, Ron is fired up tonight. Let's go to Andy, and Andy, how's it going tonight? Obviously, you'll have some thoughts.
Oh, yeah, that's right. 2 hours ago, Mr. Yankee fan, fuck this team, I'm irate. Where's the offense? Silent night, sunny gray, soft, nibbling, pitch count all over the place, bullpen can't get the job done. Castro with the errors, Judge with the base running errors. I'm so irate, the city is dead, the stadium is dead. This is going to bother me for a long fucking time. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee magic. I'm running through walls. John just treated me like a king. I'm saying congratulations, Judge. I'm fired up. Tanaka tornado tomorrow. We're going to win. We're going to get to this actual bullpen. I love this team. I never gave up.
All right. Well, let's welcome John to the show. John, how's it going?
I don't even know, Dave. I'm fine. I can't add to any after that. So let's just go on with the football.
Yeah. Let's bring it to a more positive note with the football. Man, a lot of stuff going on. I mean, in the football. we'll go back to Ron. Hopefully, we can help raise the positivity in that regard. I mean, there were just some crazy upsets. I mean, it started all the way on I think it was Friday when Clemson went out to the Dome. And, you know, there was kind of a few of these where I'm kind of like, man, I should have seen that coming. And this is actually one of those instances. I thought that, you know, Clemson was kind of hobbled and then they go in. And you know that the Syracuse tends to play these really top teams pretty tough anyway. They seem to get some juice against LSU about a couple years ago at the Carrier Dome. But they not only won the game, but they won outright. I mean, they not only kept it close, but they won outright. And Kelly Bryant with some injury concerns. I don't think it's as serious as I feared, but there's no way to really know. Anyway, that's just the beginning of what happened. There's a lot to talk about, so let's just get to Ron and get your thoughts on the on the football as we segue into week number 8.
Yeah, Dave. I mean, we always say it, right? Whenever a week schedule looks like it's a dog shit, you know, it always ends up being crazy. And you're right, started Friday. And I don't know why teams on Thursday or Friday night games, you know, the ranked teams, the high-ranked teams, they come into these games usually, you know, lollygagging, you know, just trying to get through the game. And at least once a year, we see it on a Thursday or Friday night, some team get you know, in the top 10 get upset. We saw it last year. I think Houston lost on like a Friday night or Thursday night. You had Oklahoma State a couple years ago losing to Iowa State on a Thursday or Friday. So you see it every year, and Clemson didn't, you know, they didn't pay attention to that. They came in, you know, they were flat from the start. Bryant got hurt. Syracuse, got to give them credit. They were gritty and gutty, and, you know, Clemson had a chance at the end. I guess the punter, you know, called his own fake punt that failed, killed Clemson. And then you follow that with Washington State not even showing up and losing right after that. And, you know, carried over into Saturday. Washington, another thing, it's crazy to think Washington and Washington State, two of the best offenses in the country. And, I think Washington scored 7 and Washington State scored 3 or 7, something like that. I mean, it was just it was a real crazy week, real topsy-turvy week. You know, upsets galore all over the place. And the one consistent, I guess, you have is Alabama continues to look like a powerhouse and just rolls over everybody. But, I mean, I guess what this week taught us is there's nobody really close to Alabama. You know, any of the other teams in the top 15 could lose at any time. You know, I guess we should just get ready and you know, get set for ending to the college football year where, you know, we really have no clue who's going to end up in that playoff come the end of the season.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it was really interesting to see. Now I will say on a good note for the SEC, because there was a lot of clownsmanship in the SEC the last couple of weeks. I mean, I'll give you a good example, Auburn. They were up 20-0 at LSU, and they just – and Stidham, I don't know what the heck he's doing. The dude is a spaz. I mean, he's just chucking balls, and they give up the lead and then lose outright at Baton Rouge. I mean, that was a pretty bad loss for Auburn. And it's disappointing because a lot of people are talking about that defense, how great it is. But, you know, when you're not moving the ball, you're going to give the other team an opportunity, especially in a place like that, to come back and win the game. So there is that going on. You have Tennessee – you know, losing to South Carolina. It was a closer game than I thought, though. I thought Tennessee was going to get blown out. But hey, look, they still lost, and the fans are just completely besides themselves. But on the positive note, you've got Georgia. And I've been on the Georgia train all year, but they're certainly proving me to look – I'm kind of looking good with this. I mean, Georgia is certainly having a nice year, and they're grounding, and they're pounding, and their defense is good. You know, they'll have some tests along the way. This is not over, obviously. They will play Auburn, so that'll be a good game. And we'll see. So that's sort of where we're at with the SEC. So Andy, speaking of the SEC, let's get your thoughts about last week and Bama being on the top of the heap and all the other teams kind of not. So let's see what you had to say about the previous weekend.
Yeah, Bama just plants seeds and it grows. It takes time. It's not pretty. It's just methodical. It hurts. One of these days he'll have to throw the 200 yards, but they probably won't need him much this weekend against Tennessee. They're giving 35. You mentioned Georgia. The East is their division to lose at this point. With Florida's got a couple losses, and there's nobody in that East division that's even worth talking about it at this point, to be honest with you. Kentucky's bad, even though they got a decent record. Vanderbilt stinks. Florida stinks. So it's basically Georgia at this point. You know, Auburn, that coach doesn't know how to make adjustments. And even with that 20-0 lead, that was still surprising for them to lose. I know they were playing much better after their loss against Clemson. And a lot of people, myself included, thought Auburn could start to gain a lot of momentum, make that Georgia game interesting, make that Alabama game interesting, and then they laid the second-half egg against LSU. You guys talked about the upsets, the Clemson game. Ron and John have been on the Dino Babbers bandwagon for a few years now, same with Fuente, and we were all interested to see how Dino would do It's Syracuse. Obviously, you got a signature win. That quarterback looks really good. I don't know if he's got NFL hype. I'm not sure how tall he is or how good his arm is, what the scouts think about him, but he put on a great show on Friday. So keep an eye out on Syracuse for the rest of the year. The Washington schools, as Ron already mentioned, a complete disgrace. You can maybe say Washington State can use the excuse of the air quality in Berkeley as a little bit of a mulligan. I don't buy it, but at least they have that to fall back on if they want to. But Leach eviscerated his own team, rightfully so. Washington was an even bigger disgrace, in my opinion, because Todd Graham, as we all know on this program, coaches no defense. The fact that they were held scoreless for basically 50 minutes of the game until they scored a touchdown to make it 13-7 is just a joke. Terrible. A disgraceful job out of both Washington schools. I was looking forward to a potential Apple Cup where the teams were undefeated. Additionally, it gives USC back into position to basically play themselves back into the national picture. Makes this Notre Dame-USC game even more bigly than it originally was, in my opinion. I know, Dave, you like USC, but they cost me a lot of money against Washington State. I'm down on them. I'm down on Darnold. Maybe Mike mushed them. I don't know, but we'll see what happens. That Notre Dame game should be pretty interesting. For all of us who bashed Bobby Petrino, it was fun to see him move to a Boston College team that is just completely decrepit. I mean, that's Bobby Petrino in a nutshell. All of a sudden now these teams like Central Florida and South Florida are suddenly starting to come on the radars of the casual football fans. So we'll see what happens with them. John mentioned last week the potential game between South Florida and Central Florida could be quite juicy. Beware of Navy this weekend. Navy plays Central Florida. Navy's also a pretty good team. And I believe it was a year ago or 2 years ago, I think Navy beat Houston when Houston was flirting with the Magic season. So beware of Navy. And that's basically it for me.
All right, we'll get – and I'm sure we have a lot to talk about on the baseball side too. We'll do that just a bit, a few moments. So let's go to John and get your recap. I wanted to also point one other thing out from last week. The Red River game, which tends to be all over the place in terms of quality, Oklahoma and Texas, because you never have them both, you know, the same level at the same level of performance in the same year. But this year's game was really good. Like, this was a good game. Like, I really enjoyed watching that. Oklahoma had a pretty good lead, and then Texas came back on them, and Texas came up short, but a great game. Oklahoma wins it by 5 points, so that was really fun, and probably good things for Texas, and I've been on the Texas train, too, even though I really shouldn't be, but I'm going to be a Texas Mongo this year. I think that they can do good things to finish the season. Maybe they won't end up with, like, 10 wins or 8 wins or anything, like, or some, you know, they won't end up with a whole lot of wins, but it's a good stepping stone, and I think they could go even further next year, depending on how things go. So I guess that's an endorsement of the coach, and good on him for coming over from Houston to get that going. So let's go to John and get any other thoughts you had from the weekend.
Hey, everyone did a pretty good job thus far with the recap. Yeah, Dave, the Texas-Oklahoma game, I don't think Tom Herman has failed to cover yet when he's a double or an underdog. I mean, going back to Houston, he was like 6-7-0, and now at Texas, he covered the other day. So Herman, big underdog coach. You have to note that the next time Texas is catching some points. The Georgia Tech-Miami game was really interesting. It was just played in a complete monsoon, and Miami gets a tip pass on fourth down at the end of the game to set them up in field goal range, and they make it to win by 1 point, so they stay undefeated. And Georgia Tech is 3-2 and easily could be undefeated, so a little bit of tough luck there for Tech. They'll get their chance at Georgia at the end of the year, so maybe they can throw even more of a wrench into the national title picture with that game. You guys mentioned Auburn-LSU. I think that the shine is coming off Gus Malzahn just a little bit. I mean, they went up 20-0 in that game and just completely went into a shell, which I had no idea. I don't know if they just didn't make adjustments or he's just being conservative. Didn't think LSU could score that many points, but you know, that was just awful. It reminded me of 2 years ago or might have been last year, they played Georgia in a game, and Sean White was the quarterback, and they literally could not get a first down in the second half. I think they might have had one or two first downs the entire half. And it just reminded me of that game. Malzahn, he might be in trouble here at the end of the season if they lose a few more games. It seems like everyone in the SEC is on the hot seat these days, other than Saban and Kirby Smart now from Georgia. And Andy's right. I mean, the SEC East is just a complete and utter disgrace. You know, the whole conference, really, other than Alabama, Georgia, and I mean, I guess Auburn and LSU are okay teams, but it's just very, very down again this year. See some of this other action from Saturday. Ohio State continues just to destroy teams, and they seem to do this every single year. They lose one game early, then they'll figure it out, and you know, everyone will be clamoring for them to be in the playoff by the end of the year. But you know, they still have some big games to play. They still have to play Penn State, Michigan State, and Michigan. As do, you know, we have a huge game this Saturday with Michigan and Penn State, so that'll be interesting. The Utah-USC game was really exciting at the end there. Kyle Whittingham, another guy who's just great as an underdog coach, couldn't believe they were getting two touchdowns. And I believe USC is like 1-6 against the spread this year. Dave could verify those numbers, but just seems
no,
like
that's true.
Every week they're giving points and they don't cover. And then Whittingham goes for two at the end of the game. I mean, I could see what he was doing there, but with 40-something seconds left, I don't know. I kind of think maybe if there's like 2 seconds left, you go for the win. But with 40 seconds left of that score, I might have taken my chances kicking the extra point. Let's see what else here. Yeah, probably the biggest surprise for me on Saturday was San Diego State, a complete no-show at home against Boise, a Boise team that had not looked good at all in multiple games this year, and they just completely dominated San Diego State. So maybe the pressure's off them a little bit now. They can run the table for the rest of the season. I'm speaking of San Diego State, but that was just a very disappointing loss for them. And it puts the teams from the AAC right in the driver's seat, as Andy mentioned, Central Florida and South Florida, both undefeated, both creaming all the weak teams in the AAC East. Even if the SEC East is bad, man, other than the two Florida schools, I mean, it's just a brutal division. Temple, East Carolina, Cincinnati, and UConn round out the other four schools there, and they're all horrible. Even though my UConn team did get a win on Saturday, which is encouraging, but you know, those are just four cupcake wins for both of those schools. So it'll be interesting to see how far either of those teams can rise in the polls here as we go later into the season. West Virginia got the technically upset win in terms of rankings, but we had that pick last week, the old ranked versus unranked theory, which usually is a winner. And that was a winner again on Saturday. And other than that, I think we did a pretty good job recapping the rest of the games. It was an interesting week. I mean, all those upsets, just like we said, you know, when it's a week of kind of crappy games on the schedule, sometimes you always see a surprise or two, and we certainly saw more than that. So I guess other than Alabama right now, I mean, these spots are going to be wide open at the end of the season.
Yeah, no doubt about it, John. And you know, it's one other thing. Since you're bringing up Texas Tech, I thought. I was looking at the game early in the day where they were playing West Virginia, and you know, when they were up, Texas was like way up, like, you know, over 10 points, and I'm like, it may have been more than that. It may have been like 17. I'm like, oh, there's no doubt that West Virginia is going to come back and make this game close. And they came back, but the greatest part, the wildest part of all, is they covered the spread, and the spread was like 10. It was like, it's not a small number. I thought that was really wild, but
it was four.
It was four.
Okay. Days.
It wasn't that much. Okay. But they did come back, and it was pretty something. And I think that just goes to show you how bad that defense is. Andy, I want to ask you a quick follow up on John's comments on the Utah game. Do you think they made a mistake going for two at the end when they had the touchdown late?
Are you asking John? Or are you asking?
No, I'm asking you because John brought it up.
Are you asking me? I mean, that was honestly kind of like a Riverboat Ron type of move. If he made it, he's lauded and praised. And if he doesn't, then we all second guess it. But I was a fool for taking USC. I think I mentioned last week, Utah's second-string quarterback, I had no confidence in him. But honestly, he played well enough for them to basically – be leaving the whole game until the very end. And their history, Utah always plays USC tight. I should have been more open to that situation. And yeah, these games between those two schools, they always have some sort of strange ending, or it's always just back and forth. But that's who the Utah coach is. He's not going to change. We are a very tough physical team. And I actually, we'll talk about it when we make our picks, but their season is not over by any stretch of the imagination. They could definitely still get to a pretty good bowl game. And, you know, I'm sure the average college fan that lives in, you know, Tallahassee, Florida, probably couldn't be bothered to watch a Utah game. But I don't know, they're decent. You know, Urban Meyer was there a long time ago. They beat Alabama in a Super Bowl, so they'll be fine. But USC now, as you know, Dave, they're right back in the mix. And as John mentioned, Ohio State's right back in the mix. And all these one-loss teams now, with both Washington schools losing, it's really going to be really murky. And now Ohio State, oh, congratulations, beat Nebraska, a hapless Nebraska team. Get lost. And Wisconsin, get lost too. Wisconsin doesn't play anybody for the rest of the year. I don't know if you can punch up their schedule. They could be undefeated. Who wants to watch Wisconsin?
I think I will punch that up in a moment, but you know, just to feed off your point about about USC, you know, it's just weird because they haven't played a complete game all year, honestly. I mean, I think the Stanford game is as close as they got. You almost wonder if they're going to come and turn that around for once they start getting guys healthy. They haven't had anybody dependable, you know, unlike, you know, like last year when they had Juju Smith-Schuster, and I think that might be hurting Sam Darnold. Like, he doesn't have that one guy that he can depend on to get, you know, to make a great catch. But that's just making excuses. Darnold has not played well this year. So I'll get you the Wisconsin schedule in a bit. But first, let's look at this week's games. And where's my sound effect? Okay, anyway, let's look at this week's games. I got to go jump out of this. On the schedule, as we have both been alluding to, the big game of the week is USC-Notre Dame. Notre Dame's been as quiet as you can imagine a Notre Dame team being with all the hype they get, building up wins against some, less than stellar competition. But there's some talent there. USC, same thing, not really playing great, but they've been beating some good teams along the way. And then the other games on the schedule, it's really more along the variety of this could be a sneaky good game, not more than it's a marquee matchup. Good example, Memphis versus Houston. Now, Memphis played a great game against Navy. That went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it wound up being Memphis as the victor by 3 points in a really high-scoring affair. And I don't know where Houston is, but they are 4-2, so that should be a fun one. That's tomorrow. That's on Thursday. Oklahoma State versus Texas. I think that has potential for juice, too. That could be some fun as well. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit. Syracuse-Miami, same idea, because Syracuse had the big win against Clemson. If they continue to be coached well and Babers is off to a good start, I mean, his first couple seasons here, maybe they'll give Miami a good show as well over in South Florida. Michigan-Penn State, I don't know. I'll let you guys talk about that, but technically that could be a big game. Maybe Michigan will give Penn State a hard time. And that's about it as far as the big games. So let's go to Ron as I look up the Wisconsin schedule. Ron, tell us a little bit about this week's games. Anything that sticks out to you?
Well, I think Michigan-Penn State in primetime is a big-time game, or at least they're trying to make it into a big-time game. But, I mean, if you've watched Michigan this season, Harbaugh looks lost as a play caller. Their quarterback situation is just garbage. You went from Wilton Spate, who was like a poor man's version of Brock Osweiler, to John O'Korn, who, I mean, can't hit a running back out of the backfield. And he's got a five-star recruit sitting on the bench, Brandon Peters, who hasn't seen any time. So I don't know what Harbaugh is doing. I mean, he is it has not been a good season for him, and I just don't see them. I know they have good defense. I just don't see them holding up against Penn State. you know, a Saturday night prime time in Happy Valley. USC Texas isn't, or Notre Dame is intriguing. I can't get a handle on what Notre Dame is because they really haven't played anybody good. I guess you could say that the win against Michigan State was a, you know, was a signature win, but you know, that Michigan State team a few weeks ago isn't the same team that it is now. That looks a hell of a lot better. And their quarterback, Notre Dame's quarterback, Wimbush, he can't throw the ball. I mean, he's a good athlete. He can run with anybody. He just can't throw the ball. And, you know, like you guys have all mentioned already, you know, USC, they have all the talent in the world. Darnold, you know, might be the best quarterback in the world, but they just seem to have up and down games constantly. They play down the competition. So that one, that game worries me. I'm sure it'll be entertaining, but I couldn't call that one either way. Yeah, you're right. Oklahoma State, Texas. I mean, man, Texas, for all the good that Herman's done, they have a brutal schedule, you know, having to play Oklahoma last week, Oklahoma State this week, and I think they play TCU next week. You know, it's just been a rough go for them. You know, it's a big test for Oklahoma State on the road to see if they're they can make another push near the end of this year. And I guess a game that could be interesting that's a little under the radar is UCF and Navy. Navy lost a close one last week to USF. And, you know, UCF is the little girl with the curl right now. They're scoring like 60 points a game. And, you know, we mentioned it a bunch of times on here, but their coach, Scott Frost, I'm sure is going to get a million calls at the end of the season, either from SEC teams or his alma mater in Nebraska. And he's going to be the big ticket hot name out there. So that one has some juice to it. And I can't think of anything else off the top of my head, but it's definitely got, you know, this week has some potential for juice. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, certainly. And hopefully it does play out. It should be a lot of fun. And I'm really hoping that these games deliver. So Andy, I got it here. The Wisconsin schedule for the rest of this year and next year. We'll start with the end of this year. So this week they play Maryland, and then they're at Illinois, at Indiana, Iowa at home, Michigan at home, and then Minnesota to finish the year. I mean, well, the only team that's even close to being competitive in all of that is Michigan. Then you go to next year. Wisconsin plays Western Kentucky, who I wouldn't even know where to put that at this point because I haven't really looked at them in a while. New Mexico, BYU, Iowa again, Nebraska, and then Michigan again, and then Illinois. So that's like a giant conveyor belt of cupcakes, Andy. So it's pretty soft. I'll be honest with you. So well, there it is, and let's get your preview of this week's action.
Yeah, you know, Wisconsin's going to be, unless something crazy happens this year, they're probably going to be in the Big Ten championship game. And so they're going to be right in there for a playoff spot. And it makes me mad. And I don't want to watch Wisconsin, you know. But who am I? Just some clown on the couch complaining about Wisconsin. But, yeah, you guys nailed it. That Penn State-Michigan game, it's symbolic that the game in Dallas between Florida and Michigan, it got a lot of hype, rightfully so. You know, it's Florida, big-time school. It's Michigan, Harbaugh. It's Dallas, Jerry Jones Stadium. And neither schools have quarterbacks. And yet Michigan is still, you know, they got one loss. They're plowing along. And they definitely control their own destiny. And I hate Penn State. I don't think I'll be able to watch that game. But they have a Heisman contender, unfortunately. And I don't know if Michigan has the offense to stop James Franklin this weekend. I'd like to see it, but I'd like to see these Big Ten teams cannibalize one another so when December rolls around, we can kind of just wash our hands off the fact that these teams can be in the mix. Do you remember last year we had some hot takes that put three schools for the Big Ten could potentially be in the playoff? I mean, that I'm not exaggerating. That was actually like a possibility for like 6 hours, and thank God it didn't happen. But I'm sick of the Big Ten. I'm done. I don't watch the Big Ten. There's plenty of other useless games on at 9 a.m. out here to watch. Whether it's second tier ACC or if it's AAC, it's better. It's better. I'm not watching the Big Ten, and I don't care if I lose another stupid bowl game because Iowa is, you know, enough. I'll move off from the Big Ten. But remember Iowa 2 years ago? Gosh. That Iowa Stanford Rose Bowl. Enough. I'm done. You know, the third Saturday of October, Alabama, Tennessee, that's, I'm assuming that's going to be the CBS SEC game for poor Gary Danielson. I mean, he had the Florida Hail Mary, and that's basically the one exciting game he's had. I will be into the Notre Dame Georgia game. The Notre Dame USC game. What's funny is, like, you know, sorry, Dave. It's, you know, there's for the Notre Dame models out there, whether it's Tony in Jersey or a couple quickies. Like, if they do beat USC, they're gonna be the biggest Georgia fans in the planet. Because the more Georgia keeps winning, the more that loss to Georgia looks sexy on the resume. And I don't know Notre Dame's remaining schedule. I think they play a handful of ACC schools because of their, you know, they're obliged to, they have to, like, every year. But I think after this game, it's Cupcake Central, and the game's in some Bend. So if USC doesn't come to play, they can definitely be on the outs there. As you mentioned, Miami, they just keep running the table. They don't have their running back, though, so... you know, I think they're bound to lose at some point, but that ACC is wide open now. All of a sudden, you have North Carolina State in the mix, Miami in the mix, Clemson also in the mix. Clemson is a school that can, if they run the table, they'll probably get in the playoff. They have the luxury of that. Like, Washington and Washington State, I don't think have the luxury. USC's got the luxury because they carry the mantle in the Pac-12. And then I'll be interested in the Utah-ASU game. All of a sudden, it's funny, we made fun of Todd Graham and Rich Rod going into the beginning of the year. We made fun of them last year, too, and how they could potentially be on the hot seat. But now Arizona's going to go to a bowl. They only need two more wins. And Arizona State, they're not going to fire Todd Graham at this point either. So, yeah, it's just a bunch of games to keep an eye on. It'll be entertaining. You know, look for these schools that lost last week to maybe try to rebound. But I won't be touching Washington or Washington State, to be honest with you. As John mentioned, Georgia Tech has been a very tough, with two tough losses, Labor Day weekend to Tennessee and last week, yet they're still undefeated against the spread. They're probably take out some of their frustrations against Wake Forest. That won't be a pick, but that's one game that I wrote down. Georgia Tech can definitely still have a good season despite those two tough losses. And then that UCF Navy game, and tomorrow's today's only Tuesday. I forgot about that. Yeah, so in 2 days from now, we'll get to watch that that other good AAC game. For a little Thursday night action. So we are getting deeper into the season, and the playoff picture is as muddy as it was going into the season.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think if we go back to Ron and John and my playoff predictions, we're probably not on track for any of them right now except for Bama. That's what's so wild about it. It's really, really changing week to week. So as we look at this week's games, let's go to John in Connecticut, and let's get your preview for week number 8.
Yeah, the two big games there, Penn State, Michigan, USC, Notre Dame, you guys already mentioned. Yeah, I mean, as long as O'Korn is playing, I don't see how they're going to keep up with Penn State. I mean, he had 58 yards passing last week. I mean, that's just not going to get – and I get it done against Indiana when you can run the ball and play good defense, but don't think it's going to work against Penn State. So we'll see if Harbaugh makes the switch to the five-star quarterbacks, as Ron had mentioned. So, you know, I mean, what really does he have to lose at this point? I mean, you can't get any worse than playing at quarterback. So we'll see if he makes that move. And, yeah, USC Notre Dame, I have no idea what to make of that. I would figure maybe USC will kind of show up for this one because, like we've said, they kind of play up and down to their competition. And Notre Dame, other than the Georgia game, you really can't get a good read on them. So definitely a litmus test for both teams to kind of see where they're each at in you know, this stage of the season. But the funny thing about this week is, all right, so at 8 o'clock Saturday night, you're looking for some college football. On ABC, you have Michigan, Penn State. NBC, you have USC, Notre Dame. So Fox is rolling out a huge matchup between TCU and Kansas. How the hell did Kansas get to play on 8 o'clock Fox prime time? I don't understand. They couldn't pick, you know, the Texas-Oklahoma State game. That would have been fine. Or even West Virginia. Well, not West Virginia. Baylor is horrible. But even the, let me see, the other Big 12 games this weekend. Whoever's Oklahoma is playing, that was a decent game. The point is, how are they playing? Oh, Iowa State and Texas Tech. Both of those teams are 4-2. That would have been better than TCU and Kansas. I know TCU is, you know, top five in the country now, but they're 40-point favorites. I mean, who wants to watch that in prime time? That's like a that should be an FS1 12 o'clock special. I mean, I don't know what Fox is doing on that, but regardless, that's the schedule. The AAC games this weekend be very interesting. I'll have some thoughts on that UCF-Navy game in a few minutes when we do our picks. Let's see, what else here? Yeah, really not that, you know, we mentioned those two big games. Florida State-Louisville is interesting, other than the fact that Louisville's just completely fallen apart. We'll see if that continues in Tallahassee. You kind of figure it would because, you know, Petrino, once he kind of loses the team, and at the end of it, we've seen it the last couple of years here. You would think Florida State will win that game. And then this weekend, you might have nominees for the two worst games of the year. You have 0-5 Georgia Southern playing at 0-5 UMass. So that'll be a real barn burner. Someone's going to get a win, though, so someone will feel good about themselves after that one. I mean, how far has Georgia Southern fallen? I'm surprised they haven't fired their coach yet. After Willie Fritz left, this new guy is just completely clueless and has run the program into the ground, but regardless, so that's one game. And then if you're done watching that one, you can tune in to CBS Sports Network at 7 to watch BYU at East Carolina.
Ooh.
2-1-16s going absolutely nowhere. And BYU, I mean, they might lose this game because they are just, I know Andy been an official pick with Mississippi State last week, and you know we followed hypothetically on Saturday. They are the worst team maybe in the country. I mean, and I watch UConn every week, and they're pretty bad. But BYU is just absolutely dreadful. And, so they might lose at East Carolina, and their coach isn't long for the world either because, you know, it's probably the worst BYU team in at least 20 or 30 years. But, those two games for the rights to, I guess, declare the worst in college football this year. So if that kind of intrigues you, those two games are on the schedule. So an interesting week, and I'm sure it'll – provide some excitement like it always does.
Yeah, and I think, what I'm seeing with some of these matchups, you're seeing some teams start to rise. I mean, we talked about Miami as well in the game, and Georgia Tech for that matter. They're both actually pretty competitive. And one team that I'd like to highlight before we go to picks is North Carolina State. Actually, I think NC State's doing pretty well. I mean, they went out and they beat, I think it was Louisville, Andy, I think that was, and they had a good game. They've been having some good games, so they're off to a pretty good start. So, I'm not saying that's going to be a pick or anything, but I do think that they're doing pretty well, too. So let's get to the picks. And just a giant, giant palette of games to select from. So I will say this regarding USC. I think this is the week they finally put it together and actually beat a good team. And they play a complete game. And I hope. I mean, jeez. I mean, we've been waiting long enough. It's only been like 8 weeks. So can we please get a game where they play from the beginning to the end at a very high level? It'd be great. Anyway, let's do it. So, picks, let's go to you, John, since you were best for last week. We'll get your picks whenever you're ready for week number 8.
Yeah, this feels good. First time, I think, in freaking 3 years that I'm picking first, but we'll take it. We'll start off here, as I mentioned, the Navy-UCF game. And honestly, I know UCF has been playing great, but I was shocked to see this line. I'll take Navy getting 7.5 at home all day. I don't care who they're playing. You know, they run that option, which is very difficult to defend, as we know, especially just with 1 week preparation. You know, I was reading some, like, analytics kind of thing in the offseason. And I guess Ken Niumatalolo, their coach, is worth at least 2 to 3 wins a year. And you can kind of see it on the field because talent-wise, I mean, there's not many players on Navy that are going to be, you know, pro prospects. And this guy's winning 9 or 10 games every single year. So he really coaches them up. I would just be shocked if this was a blowout. This is going to be a close game. I'm not going to say Navy's going to win. But you can see either team having the ball last in a one-possession game. And they always seem to play well at home. I can't think of the last time that Navy has laid an egg in a home game. So give me Navy, the Midshipmen, plus 7.5. They might win, they may not win, but this is going to be a close game against a hot Central Florida team. So that's game number one. And game number two, this is kind of the buy low situation. I mentioned San Diego State just laid a complete egg last week against Boise State. We would not expect that to happen again. And I was really surprised to see this line. They were 7-point favorites last week against Boise, and now they're only 7-point favorites against Fresno. I know Fresno they're really improved this year. I mean, they were like 1-11 or something horrible last year. They brought in Jeff Tedford, the old Cal coach, and he's doing a great job. Don't get me wrong. However, this is saying that Boise and Fresno are on the same level. I just don't see that. I think San Diego State's going to rebound, and you're only laying a touchdown here. They should be able to get back to, you know, their running game, and they had a lot of turnovers in that game. So I just think they'll get back on their winning ways, and you know, maybe a little bit of pressure is off now that their undefeated season is gone, and they can just kind of focus on winning the conference. So San Diego State -7, and Navy +7.5 are the picks for this weekend in college football.
Thanks very much, John. I really hope for their sake and for the sake of the Mountain West that San Diego State gets it back together, because like you, like Andy, I had scratch in that San Diego State game too, and I was really stunned. Maybe this is the reason they lost, but they're stunned that they just didn't even show up. What an egg. It was pretty bad. So up next, let's go to Ron for your picks. When you're ready to go, Ron. Oh, here's me. Ron's actually dropped off. Sorry. Let's see if I can get him on. Ron, are you there with us? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, Dave.
Okay. We're ready for your week 8 picks.
Ah, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. I lost you for a while. All right. I have my week 8 picks. I have two road dogs. I'm going to take game number one, Kentucky, +10.5 over Mississippi State. Kentucky's not the greatest team in the world. They've beaten a lot of cupcakes and, you know, done it by a slim margin, but I think they can cover the 10.5. And my second game is Louisville +6.5 over Florida State on the road. Florida State has a great defense, no offense. You know, basically the loser of this game probably isn't going to make a bowl. So I expect Lamar Jackson to come out and put on a show. And even if they don't win, I think they'll cover the 6.5. So I'll take Kentucky +10.5 and Louisville +6.5.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Let's move it right along. We'll go to my picks. And here we go for week 8. So, you know, I was thinking about it all week. I thought about maybe taking the USC game. I'm going to leave that one alone. Instead, I'm going to go with my other season-long interest. We'll go with Texas getting 7 at home against Oklahoma State. Yeah, we know Texas is up and down, but man, this is a team that I think is getting better as with each week. Maybe I'm crazy, but, you know, Oklahoma State, as you know, not a great defensive team to begin with. And so I think this is going to be a challenge for the Pokes over there in Austin. So I expect Texas to keep this one very, very close, and they might even win it. So we'll go Texas +7. Game number two. You know, we always talk about the team that has a big win and, you know, expecting a letdown the next week. And this is the situation that I see for Cal. Cal had a great win on Friday against Washington State. But I don't know if they're going to keep pace with Arizona this time around. So we're going to go Arizona -3 at Cal. They have this new quarterback that can really, really run the ball. So that's going to be a real challenge for the Cal defense. A defense that's actually not that bad, in my opinion, but I still think that Arizona will find a way to win it. over there in Berkeley. So to repeat, Texas plus 7, Arizona minus 3 for week 8. So we continue, and let's now go to Andy. And Andy, we're ready for your week 8 picks.
All right. So game number 1, I'm going to take Utah giving 9, hosting Arizona State. Again, we're going to apply the letdown theory here. Utah left it all on the field against USC. Maybe some other teams at that point might just be like, we're done. I can't play another game anymore. But with the way they're coached and the way they're built, I think they're ready to get back on that train and keep it continuing for the rest of the year. Arizona State, they're still partying after beating UW. Now, be mindful. They had what was considered at the time a big upset against Oregon about a month ago. And the next week, they lost to Stanford, but they covered. But I say they covered because David Shaw doesn't like to cover games, even though they won 49-7 last week. But, David Shaw, don't win by too much. Don't get too crazy offensively. We need to run the ball more. Keep it between the tackles. Don't go outside. In party mode, a big upset. They might not be 100% focused on the practice field this week. And I think Utah will be able to run the ball on them. As we know, they're not very good throwing the ball. But I think Arizona State will, their mind will not be 100% focused at the task at hand. I think they are definitely due for a letdown. And I think Utah will roll when all said and done. So I'm taking the Utah Utes giving 9, expecting Arizona State to have a letdown / hangover effect from their UW win. Game number 1. Game number 2, I was leaning Arizona with you, Dave, but I will not go checker on the checker. I will twist and turn on the fly here. And I've already taken Alabama.
You're gonna do this?
A bunch of times. No, I'm not. We're gonna take ECU. getting 5.5 from BYU. We picked against BYU a bunch of times on the program, off the program. We know ECU is terrible. I think this ECU was mentioned a few weeks ago when they played UConn on a Sunday, I think. But that's water under the bridge. ECU might stink, evidenced by the line. BYU shouldn't be favored by anybody except maybe UMass. They might even play each other this year, too. But ECU, not knowing a thing about them, I will take them getting 5.5 points against a BYU team that really can't move the ball. They've got all sorts of injuries, and they just seem to be their own worst enemy. And if we go down with the ship, so be it. BYU has yet to cover the game, yet to win a game. So hopefully they can keep that trend going for at least one more week. Give me ECU getting 5.5 points from a hapless BYU team to go with the Utah minus 9 pick against ASU week number 8.
Andy, that's gonna be an awesome watch. Two awful teams. Oh my gosh, that's gonna be fun. Now I was getting crazy. I was going nuts because I thought you were gonna take Alabama minus 35.5 against Tennessee. That would have been epic. Like, if you had gone,
I probably will in the behind the scenes, but not. I take Alabama. I think everyone's on the podcast. So
right.
Switch it up.
Right. Good deal. So that's it for the panel. Let's get the guest picks in. Here we go. This is Yachts' picks for week number 8 in college football. He starts with Michigan plus 9.5 at Penn State. Pretty good. And we'll go. And here's a call that I love. I think this is a good pick. Now, maybe you guys will agree. But he has Syracuse plus 15 at Miami. I mean, they're both coming off of big wins, but I think that Miami might be the kind of team that's pretty sloppy in trying to execute after a big win. relative to where Syracuse would be. As we know, Mark Richt coaches Miami, and sometimes he's due for that WTF loss, so this could be it. So to repeat for John, Michigan plus 9.5 and Syracuse plus 15 for week 8. That's good stuff, guys. So let's take a moment and talk a little baseball. So let's revisit the ALCS and the NLCS. The Dodgers are up 3-1 in the top of the sixth inning. Darvish has pitched 5 innings so far. Pretty good to start. We'll see if the Dodgers can finish the deal. They are already up 2-0 in the series. They could be up 3-0 if they hold on to the lead tonight at Wrigley Field. So we'll see about that one. In the ALCS, the Yankees, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, stormed back from a 0-4 deficit in the game, came back, and they've tied. They've won the game. They won the game 6-4, and they are tied the series against Houston in what has certainly been a bit of a surprise, I think, if you really think about what the talent, you know. It's a surprise because Houston was up 2-0 to start.
No,
not a surprise. All right, I better stop talking about this. Let's get to everyone else. All right, Andy, your thoughts about the playoffs so far in baseball?
I'll probably echo thoughts to Ron. So to clarify, I bet the Yankees tonight. I bet. So my rant was just like a one-man representation of, like, Yankee Twitter in the sixth inning versus Yankee Twitter in the eighth inning. Just a complete polarizing tale of two reactions. But as we all know, and I fucking listened to Susan and John, I don't know why, on the way home to work, and it was when it was second and third, Headley just got the base hit, and Susan was like, this team doesn't give up. That's why they're so likable. There's so many people. And I was just like, I'm going to throw up in my mouth. And Gardner got the gritty, the grounder to second base, the score run. And we all know what happened next. But if you watch games 1 and 2, yeah, neither team really got anything going with the bat. The Yankees lost on Friday night. I think it was 2-0, but the Astros scored both their runs on, well-hit balls in one inning. That was basically it. Tanaka pitched really well. And in game number 2, Verlander went the distance and they struck out 14 people. So, and then once it gets to Yankee Stadium, I hate it. I hate them. But they don't go away. If you don't kill them when you have the chance to kill them, especially this year, we joke about it, but it's true. Like they weren't going away. And say what you want about their team. I mean, their starting pitching is a little shaky, but CC has definitely come back to life. Everyone wanted him dead, but he's back. People wanted to deport Tanaka. He stepped up his game. Remember when Chapman was an embarrassment and he couldn't be used? Well, now he's got his move back. And then they have the back of their bullpen, in addition to Chapman, Patancic is their worst guy. But so they put him aside. But that team's just playing with fire right now, and it's the stars are aligned. We joke about it, but it's true. Dodgers, Yankees World Series, basically lock it up, Craig Carton style. We're watching the Dodgers now. The Cubs are definitely very good in their series beforehand. They've got the experience, and the Nationals are Nationals are a joke. The Nationals are basically the opposite of the Yankees. They're like a better version of the Twins. They just can't get the job done. I think Russo the other day said they're 4-10 at home in their postseason games. That's not good. And then they couldn't get the job done last week in the clinching game 5. Basically, the 5 years anniversary of Storen shitting his brains against the Cardinals, they did the same thing in a bit different fashion last week. So now you've got a well-pitched Dodger team right now. Everyone's saying, see, Darvish is soft. Darvish, pitching pretty good tonight, Dave.
Yeah,
and the Cubs just seem like they're
you know, for all the heroics they pulled against the Nationals last week, it just seems like they're a little tired, running out of gas here. So if the Dodgers hold on in the last four-plus innings here, it's going to be a big task for the Cubs to get back in this. They've already burnt Lester. So I don't even know who Arrieta, I think, is pitching tomorrow, right? So that's a tall task for the Cubs. I don't care how delicate of a genius Joe Maddon is. And I know Dave Roberts can frustrate you. You make some weird moves too, but Dodgers Yankees, man, it's going to happen. And that, I will stop betting on the Yankees when that happens. I'll be done. I will be back on Dodger land. I'll be D-O-D-N, spelled it wrong intentionally with the Yankees.
Yeah. Well, you said it earlier this year, Andy. I mean, the 16-17 is way in the rearview mirror now that they lost in September. So obviously, you were right on with that. Let's go to Ron. Let's get your baseball thoughts, Ron. I mean, you talk about these two series. Where do you see all of these teams at this point of the season? And you can comment on the division series too if you'd like.
I mean, Andy nailed it. It's going to be Yankees Dodgers, and the Yankees are going to win it all. And you know, 2 months ago you had Tanaka deported back to Japan. You had fucking Sabathia, you know, retired. You had fucking Todd Frazier was people wanted to fucking shoot him in the head and drive him back to Tom's River. I mean, you could really even Judge. I mean, Mike got calls today, right? Move him down to eighth.
Spot,
he sucks.
Yep.
He strikes out too much. I mean, I'm so sorry. And, you know, I know there's good Yankee fans, you know, and every fan base has Mongos, but my God, I mean, you can't live, you know, in the tri-state area and listen to this shit day after day and feel good about this team. And feel good for their fans. I mean, Mark Mongo is a fucking Yankee fan. If they win the World Series this year, I'll blow my fucking brains out. I can't see it. You know, this narrative that they're such a likable team and you know, good for them and we loved them. Bullshit. 2 months ago, when they were five games behind in the standings, and I said they're gonna fucking overtake the Red Sox and go further in the playoffs. Oh, yeah, reverse mush. No, it's not a reverse mush. I could see it coming from a mile away because the baseball gods are fucking retards, and the Yankees will always be the Yankees, and every other team is going to go in the shitter, and we're going to have 15 years of Aaron Judge and his dopey, gap-tooth, 8-foot-tall smile hitting 60-foot, you know, 60 homers a year. You know, Gary Sanchez, pretty sure, you know, at one point at the beginning of the season, everybody called up and what's wrong with Sanchez? He's not hitting home runs like he was last year. Maybe we should demote him. Start Romine. How many times have we heard start Romine? I mean, for a fucking fan base as idiotic and, you know, just fickle as the Yankees, I mean, it just drives me nuts, man. It drives me nuts to watch a game like tonight. You have a 4-0 lead in Yankee Stadium, and you have a pitcher, McCullers. You take him out. The reliever comes in, gives up two quick runs. You have first base open. Aaron Judge up, who either strikes out or hits an 800-foot home run. Walk the guy. Give yourself a chance for a double play. And what do? You pitch to him with Joe Musgrave, who is the shittiest pitcher in the world. I mean, and then you bring your closer in the eighth. I mean, it's bad enough that the Yankees have talent and they can win games. And Girardi is a great fucking manager, and he's been put out the pasture every goddamn year by the fan base. Oh, every fan base does that. No, they don't. You know, I read Red Sox Twitter. Nobody is calling for fucking Andrew Benintendi to be sent down after a 4-strikeout game. No Met fans are calling for Ahmed Rosario to be
to be traded because he booted a ground ball. It's bullshit. And to have to deal with it and see it again is just sickening, Dave. It's sickening. And if it comes down to the Yankees and Dodgers, I will dye my hair blue and I will buy a Kirk Gibson jersey and I will run out into the street and I will fly to California, Dave, and we will, if the Dodgers win, we will go on a fucking spree like never has never been seen. Mark my words.
I will buy you the first drink, at least. At least. Maybe two or three. Absolutely. That would be, there'd be a lot to celebrate.
I don't like
there.
The Yankees, Dave.
I have gathered this conclusion. All right. Well, let's then get back to the, let's go from that then. Let's get to the NFL. Yay, all right, NFL. Well, it's another somber note, unfortunately, as we segue to John. Aaron Rodgers is out for the season with a broken collarbone. He injured the collarbone on a tackle from a Minnesota Vikings defender. And, I mean, just a tough spot. I mean, you wouldn't say it's an illegal hit or anything, although we'll see if John agrees with that. But the bottom line here is that that's a big blow to the Packers. And a lot of discussion about who's going to be the next guy. Is it going to be Huntley? I think it's going to be Huntley. There's some rumblings about possibly getting Kaepernick in there, but it doesn't make any sense. I think Huntley probably makes the most sense here. But on the field, you're talking about another wild week and some upsets. I mean, Miami, holy cow, down 17-0. I actually caught that. I told you guys, Atlanta is soft, man. I mean, they're up 17-0. I said, you watch, Miami's going to come back and make this game close. And they did. I mean, they came back. What surprised me is that they won outright. I mean, that was pretty fabulous, but still, I mean, the idea that Atlanta has a big lead and they held on to it, it doesn't happen. I mean, not especially when it's a situation where all eyes expect them to do something, they don't. So I've certainly been down on them all year. All of us have been, and I think that was almost a vindication for all of us here in the panel. Anything else? Let's see. Rams, okay, they turned it around. I didn't understand why Jacksonville was favored in that game, to be honest. I know that the Rams got embarrassed, you know, a little bit towards the end of that last game, but no, I mean, come on. I mean, seriously. And then there's other stuff. I mean, Steelers with a huge win at the Chiefs. I was really pumped for that. I mean, it was a really rough and tumble game. Didn't get to see a lot of it, but because I was not in town, but man, that was cool. It was good to see that they were making a little bit of a stand there in Arrowhead. And what else? Let's see. Pretty good Monday night game. What happened? Oh, the Sunday night. Oh, my gosh, the Giants tearing up the Broncos. I mean, that certainly was a no-show by Denver. So I'm sure there's more, but that's all I have right now. So, oh, my gosh, they walked Darvish? Oh, my goodness. That is not good for the Cubs. Wow. So the Dodgers get...
Carl Edwards Jr., not a big-time pitcher.
No.
He's a former Dodger. You know all about that.
That's true. You're right. Former Dodger, look at that. Wow, wasn't even close, that last pitch. So let's go to John, and let's get your recap from last week. And again, it's a bummer that pretty much everybody said the same thing on Twitter, except maybe Skip Bayless, but it was a pretty big bummer losing Rodgers there that week. So your thoughts, John?
Yeah, my thoughts, it was just, I don't know, I was depressed and deflated trying to rationalize some way that the Packers could somehow keep it together for the next, I don't know how many weeks. Now, I wouldn't say that he's out for the season just yet. You know, the optimist in me says that Hundley can go 4-4. There's a bye week in the mix, so that'd be 9 weeks. And then Rodgers could come back week 16 against the Vikings, coincidentally, and then go from there. You know, that's probably not going to happen, but that's how I have to think to try to get myself through the rest of the season at this point. Otherwise, I wouldn't have any meaningful football to watch until next September, which is kind of sad. And, you know, the Packers, for all their flaws, I mean, Rodgers was going to win the MVP this year, and they were going to be, I'm not saying they were going to win the Super Bowl, but they were going to be right there on divisional weekend or championship weekend with a chance. So just really just a freak injury. I don't think it was a dirty hit. You know, Barr could have pulled up, but it wasn't roughing the passer or anything. So it's just, you know, a freak thing. And as soon as it happened, I said to myself, just even before any diagnosis or anything, I saw, you know, that's a collarbone injury. So he's had it before, but it was on his non-throwing shoulder last time, which makes this one worse, but he had surgery, so just hoping at this point, like I said, Hundley can go 4-4, and I don't think he'll be as bad as he looked on Sunday. I mean, if you're going in on the road against one of the toughest defenses in the league with no preparation, I mean, anyone would look that horrible. I think the coaches will adjust the game plan, you know, with a week of practice and everything. I think he'll be all right. The Packers are certainly in a better situation than they were when Rodgers missed time 3 years ago, when you had the holy trinity of Seneca Wallace, Scott Tolzien, and Matt Flynn starting games. I think Hundley will be all right, so we'll see what happens. But like I said, that's my plan for the Packers. 4-4 with Hundley. Rodgers comes back week 16, and then go from there. And, you know, who knows at that point. But that's what I hope for. As for the rest of the games, yeah, the Giants, I mean, who would have saw that coming? You know, they kept McAdoo, you know, not calling the plays anymore, like it was some top secret FBI, you know, mission that was held in secret all week. But, hey, the team looked great with this other guy calling plays, so maybe McAdoo should give that up. He's clearly got other, you know, to manage the team. He was doing a horrible job. He should be focused on that and not calling his plays. And you mentioned the Dolphins. Who would have thought, you know, down 17-0, Jay Cutler leading a comeback like that in the second half, 20-0. So that was pretty crazy. I'm sure Ron will have some stuff to say about that. Just absolutely ridiculous call in the Jets game that cost them, you know, Safarian Jenkins supposedly fumbling it, and then they call it a touchback, which is a complete joke. But, you know, you guys could talk about that. The Bears with a surprising win. I mean, the Ravens, who knows with them? I mean, their offense is just – Flacco might be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. He's just terrible. Just, you know, I'm bitter because I took the Ravens. That was my only loss. But, you know, they stink. Yeah, and, Dave, your Steelers, I mean, we should have seen this one coming. The Steelers always beat the Chiefs. And we saw it in the playoff game last year. We saw it in the regular season earlier in the year when they – just torched Ben, had like 5 or 6 touchdowns in that game. And on Sunday, Kareem Hunt is one of the most dynamic players in the NFL, and Andy Reid's giving him like 5 carries in the first half. And it wasn't a blowout or anything. And then at the end of the game, he's trying to throw like 20-yard passes down the field when all you need to do is just move the chains. And I saw Hunt, he's just wide open just for a dump-off pass, and Smith is throwing it 30 yards down the field. This is when you want to be the check-down guy. You're just trying to move the chains there at the end of the game. But in any event, good win for your Steelers, Dave. And, you know, cap off a interesting week, certainly, in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let's get right to that Jet game. That was one of the games I had at my parents' house while I was away, celebrating my niece's birthday. She turned 8. It was a good party. But the next day, I was watching that game. And that call was such horseshit. I can't get over that. I mean, that was a terrible call. Just a terrible call. Austin Seferian Jenkins goes in the end zone. Yeah, the ball comes loose, but he gets it right back. How do you rule that a touchback? It's a joke. So, Ron, your thoughts about last weekend. Again, that was a terrible call. I think the NFL admitted it, but still ridiculous. So, anyway, Ron, we'll give it to you for the NFL recap.
Yeah, you know, you figured I would be more mad about that than I really am. And, you know, obviously it was a horseshit call. You can't justify it. There's no explaining it. I mean, the guy scored a touchdown. I mean, at worst, you mark him at the 1 yard line, give him another chance. You know, every explanation that I've seen makes no sense on the call. And to boot, I mean, how many calls do we see in the NFL where, you know, you think to yourself, it's going to go one way, but there's not enough conclusive evidence, so they keep it with the call on the field. And the call on the field was a touchdown, and they still overturned it. It makes no sense. No sense. And, you know, I'm sure they would have lost in overtime to the Patriots, you know, but they should have had a chance to at least play that overtime. You know, I am disappointed in that fact. But, you know, I mentioned this yesterday, I think. The Jets were up 14-0. They were rolling, and Tom Brady looked like he was off his game, and he throws a pick six to Buster Screen right in the middle of the field, and Screen dropped the pass and dropped the interception. And 2 or 3 plays later, they score a touchdown. It's 14-7 instead of 21-0. And the game changed on that play. I mean, once you see that happen, there is no doubt in my mind that the Patriots were winning that game. So, you know, even if they would have, you know, kept that call on the Severian Jenkins touchdown, in my opinion, it was delaying the inevitable. I think the Patriots would have won. But the Jets definitely deserve to have got at least gotten that chance in overtime. Hey, you know, there's no moral victories, but I mean, you gotta for you look at that Jets roster and the depth chart and everything, and they're competing. And you know, under Rex Ryan or with Geno Smith as a quarterback, I mean, that game on Sunday would have been 45-7 Patriots, and the Jets were there at the end. So, you know, I can't really, you know, cry about that game. The Jets are a hell of a lot better than I thought they were going to be. And yeah, my other big takeaway from the week was the Aaron Rodgers injury. You know, it's just, when you look at football right now, the NFL standings, I mean, every team is either 2-3, 3-3, or 4-2. I mean, every single team, there's so much parity. It's insane. And I guess in my opinion, the Packers were that one team who you would think of. You know, they have Rodgers, he's the best football player in the world, in my opinion. So, you know, they're going to be in it in the playoffs. They're going to be in it all year long. If, you know, you have a slate of stinkers, you know, turn on the Packers game and watch Rodgers go to work, and you always get your money's worth. So for me personally, I think that was, the most disappointing thing about his injury is, you know, it takes the Packers from being, you know, an NFC favorite to, I mean, who the hell knows? I mean, who has the best record in the NFC now? It's the LA Rams, the Eagles, the Redskins, the Panthers who got embarrassed on Thursday night. I mean, it's just been such a, you know, a weird, crazy year so far in the NFL. I mean, one team looks great one week, they look shitty the next week. I mean, look at the Jaguars. I mean, the Jaguars are a different team every week they play. They get killed by the Rams this week at home. I mean, you can't make it up. But I guess, you know, it gives us the reason to watch at least, and it makes things interesting.
Yeah, it keeps everybody on their toes. I mean, I'm kind of still not sold on some of these teams, the Eagles in particular. You talk about another team that you just don't know what to expect. You know, I was clowning the trade for Adrian Peterson. What does he do? He gets two touchdowns and, like, what is it, like 200 rushing yards in the game against the Bucks. I mean, John called that game big time. Like, he nailed it with that pick last week when he said that the Bucks defense is terrible. So that, among other things, Patriots do get the win. They have a big showdown against Atlanta this week. The other big matchups of the week, by the way, are Chiefs Raiders. They're both coming off of losses, and then the aforementioned Eagles hosting the Washington Redskins. Some of these may be covered in picks, so we'll get into that. So let's go to Andy to get your recap of last week's NFL.
Yeah, next week's game, like, Sunday night's a good game, Monday night's a good game, and everything else kind of shitty. Raiders, Chiefs, obviously, in the canning with the rivalry scenario. But, you know, last week, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over with the Buga. And another week, another bet on Jay Cutler. It was 17-0. We were irate. Even with Atlanta's history of food barring leads and stuff like that, Jay Cutler wasn't doing it. And I don't even really think he did do it. I mean, they did win, but Atlanta was in position to either tie the game at the end with a field goal or score a touchdown. And Matt Ryan did Matt Ryan things, and he threw a pick in the big spot at the end of the game. I don't think Jay Cutler threw for over 150 yards. I don't think Trubisky, in his win over the Ravens, threw over 150 yards. And Jeff Goff definitely didn't throw over 150 yards against the Jags. I don't know how many yards Bortles threw, but you had a lot of teams win last week despite, you know, very woefully inadequate performances by the quarterback. Enough with the Jaguars. Last week, You had all these articles being like, look at what the Jaguars are doing. Their blueprint's great. They've got a great defense and they've got a great running game. They're winning despite Bortles. Like, they're not letting Bortles do anything, and it's working. This plan is great. And then they lay an egg against the Rams. Enough about the Jaguars. I get that they're in a crappy division that's wide open because Houston's got no J.J. Watt. And the Titans, you know, they're kind of an open-ended question now. With a terrible defense. You know, you let Brissett go up and down the field last night. You know, Mariota is good, but that's a wide-open, shitty division. Someone's got to win it. So that's why the Jaguars get, you know, whatever you want to call it, potential talk. Who's going to win that AFC South? It's disgusting. God, like, gee, enough. And I'm also mad I didn't piggyback John's pick on the Texans last week. The Browns are an absolute joke. Their quarterback was Hogan. He threw two picks. The league has all these terrible quarterbacks, but I'm watching. It's fun. But the Browns, I think they covered week one, and they haven't covered the game since. If you had Houston on their defense and the fantasy, you went ham. But I should have taken the Texans. The Eagles, Dave. You mentioned the Eagles. You've taken them. All of a sudden, the Eagles are in the driver's seat in the NFC East because you know, the Cowboys are a little ambiguous now with the Elliott suspended one day, then he's not suspended, then he might be suspended, and now he's not suspended. And so who knows what's going on with them? The Giants are a disaster. The Skins, nothing. But the Eagles, remember 2 years ago, they fired Chip Kelly, and they were rebuilding everything. And now they've got, you know, Carson Wentz is taking some big strides year two. And they're making a lot of big plays down the field, and Brown's pretty serviceable. So as long as they remain and it can avoid being their own worst enemy, which seems to be the Achilles heel of a lot of teams in the NFL, then they're going to be right there, especially in the, you know, so-so NFC East. Ron hit it in the head. Like, Rodgers, you know, I'm a Mongo, so, you know, I never, ever, 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 ever bet against Green Bay, except maybe like one time when Seattle played them. So, you know, we'll have to adjust that game plan for the next month or so, or however long Rodgers takes to recoup. But no one saw the Giants, man. Like, suicide pools all over the country, I think, basically were wrapped up last week because no one, you know, if you used Denver, you were gone. And if you used the Falcons, you were gone. And then, you know, the week before, the Steelers had polarizing loss to. I forget who they lost to, but
Jacksonville,
I think. That destroyed a lot of Okay, that's right, Jacksonville. Yeah, Roethlisberger threw all those picks. That was a game that got a lot of people eliminated. But yeah, and the Patriots, you know, that was definitely a terrible call for the Jets. And like Ron said, it could have easily been 21-0. You know, at least he fumbled. It was, you know, what actually won that game is Gronkowski. He had some big plays, some nice catches. Patriots defense was terrible again, especially on third down. You let McCown throw for gosh darn nearly 400 yards. That's not Bigley. So we'll see what happens against Atlanta this weekend. It could be one of those whoever has the ball last wins. But it's exciting. And speaking of teams that are now like kicked back in, how about Yachts's 2-4 Chargers? All of a sudden they've got life again, because you know, I don't know who the wild card teams aren't gonna have the records, I don't think. So 9-7, man, 8-8, 9-7. Just don't get too you know, a C-minus effort could get you in the playoffs this year in the NFL. As sad as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, we may in fact have, like, I don't know, 15 teams finish 8-8 or 7-9 or something like that. Yeah, No doubt. Let's go to, let's see, anybody else? Let's see. No, I think that's it. Let's go to picks. And, John, once again, we go to you for the NFL in week number 7.
All right, Dave. We'll start off here with the aforementioned Los Angeles Chargers coming off 2 wins in a row. Well, I think they'll make it 3 this weekend, giving one point here, essentially a pick'em to the Broncos. And I think I just have a horrible taste in my mouth actually sitting down to watch that game thinking the Broncos would dominate, and they just completely laid a huge egg. And I know teams don't play the same week to week. You usually try to bet on teams that get embarrassed the previous week. But in this situation, I think the Chargers have the momentum. The Broncos, I don't know what the hell their game plan was the other night. I mean, they really want Simeon to throw it 50 times. I mean, they didn't even try to establish any sort of running game. It was just horribly coached game. And Emmanuel Sanders looks like he's going to be out a couple weeks. So they have basically just Simeon to Thomas. And I think the Chargers will be able to handle them and, keep the momentum going. They've won a couple close games now. I think they'll make it 3 in a row here. So give me the Chargers -1 for the first game. The second game, I'm probably going to regret this, but might as well go for it. I'm going to take the Packers getting 6 points. Now, listen, obviously Rodgers, it's a huge loss. But now everyone is, they're burying the Packers, and everyone is loving the Saints now. Oh, watch out for the Saints defense. They scored, 3 touchdowns the other day. Oh, the Saints running game is so good. Oh, watch out for the Saints. They've won 3 in a row. Listen, these are the same old Saints that we've come to know and love. They're still a dreadful team on the road. I think, like I said earlier, Hundley with a week of practice, they're going to adjust the game plan. I think he's going to be fine. I mean, he's obviously not going to be Aaron Rodgers, but I think he can be a serviceable starting quarterback. The Packers catching almost a full touchdown at home. I think they're going to come out and play inspired this week. I'm not going to say they're going to win the game, but I think this will be close. I honestly thought the line might have been like Saints -1 or 2, and you're getting a full 4 more points than that. So give me Green Bay +6 to play an inspired effort for their new quarterback at home. And then the first pick was L.A. Chargers -1. So those are the 2 picks for NFL week number 7.
All right, thanks, John. Let's go over to Ron and get your picks for week number 7 NFL.
All right. Well, first game, Dave, I'm going to go checker on checker with John. I also like Green Bay +6 against the Saints. And listen, the Saints might win. I definitely think the Packers have enough to cover the 6. Saints on the road, I don't trust at all. And like I said, it goes week to week with these teams, and they looked so good last week. I could see them coming out and laying a stinker, being overconfident because Hundley's the quarterback, and the Packers rising to the occasion. So I'll take the Packers +6. And my second game, I'm a believer, Dave. I am a believer. This is going to be maybe the first team to start 0-5 to finish 11-5 and go to the Super Bowl. Eli Manning doesn't have that Devo Odell Beckham to hold him back anymore. He has gritty gutty receivers now. Some white guy who they signed off the bench to off the street to play receiver. McAdoo turned it around. He gets it again. The defense is, and Spags are back and better than ever. I'm taking the Giants +6 against the Seattle Seahawks. Suffice it to say, I think the Giants will win it outright. I'm on the train, Dave. Remember this. Come December. I called it. I'm on the train. Giants +6 over the Seahawks. So Green Bay +6 and the Giants +6. Mark my words, Dave. Giants are winning the Super Bowl.
Ron calling his shot from the deep center field. All right, well, it's my turn for picks. All right, let's go to my picks. Here we go. I'll be very, very swift for them. Well, here's something interesting. I'm going to go head-to-head with John's pick. I like the Broncos here. I think the defense is going to give the Chargers a pretty tough time. And I also think there might be a very slight, I don't think the NFL really cares about this stuff, but I think there could be a revenge factor for the Broncos won the game. What am I talking about? So never mind. So I still think they'll win anyway. they're coming off of a game where they just were embarrassed by said Giants and the gritty and the goody and all that. But the Broncos just were awful. They looked completely lost out there. You have to think that they're, after a loss like that, They're going to focus and come out really, really tough. I think they will rough up Phillip Rivers, and the Chargers will be good for their like three or four turnovers. Broncos will come in to the home of John Elway, basically Los Angeles, where he's from for the most part. He's from the Valley. So Broncos plus one, game number one. Game number two, we continue the anti-Eagle train. Not to say that the Eagles are a bad team. I've come around on them, actually. I think they're pretty good. You know, Carson Wentz is a steady quarterback, making strides, as Andy said. I think they're coached very well. I think Doug Peterson's a pretty good coach, to be honest. I think he's done a good job this year. It's a good team. But I also think they're due for a loss because their point differential just does not impress me. Other than the Cardinal game. So while there's certainly a lot of expectations at this point for the Eagles, I think the Redskins are not that bad. The Niners gave them a tough time last week, but I still think that that's a good team, not a great team, but a good enough team to keep the game closer than 4.5. Generally, with NFC East games, you want to take the points when you're talking about head-to-head NFC East divisional games. So we'll go Redskins on the road plus 4.5. Again, Broncos plus one, Skins plus 4.5 for week number 7. So we will now go to Andy. And Andy, it's all yours for the picks.
All right, I'll make it quick. No need to overanalyze these games here. I will go a checker on the checker game number one with John. I will take the Chargers. So I guess I'm going head-to-head with you, Dave. I always foolishly seem to take the Chargers every single week. So just keep it continuing this Sunday. I think the season, regardless of the crossroads / Dire Straits, heading into that Giants game, and they pulled that one out, and they pulled another game out last week against Oakland. They were assisted by a missed extra point, which obviously was haunting for Spicy Jack Del Rio. The Chargers, who knows, they could finish 6-10 for all we know at this point, but they won two in a row. They keep up the momentum. Melvin Gordon is definitely a beast. Denver laid an egg last Sunday, as we all saw. I don't know if Simeon is going to be playing or if it's Osweiler. I mean, a left-handed Simeon is better than an Osweiler, to be honest with you. But so his status, and he might not be 100%, but not really worried about that. Chargers always seem to play close games with the Broncos. We saw that opening night here just 6 weeks ago. So I think we'll get her done this week. We'll give me Chargers game number one. Game number two, I will go head-to-head with Ron. I will take the Seahawks. They've been well-rested off a bye. This game might be 12-3. There might not be a touchdown in this game, but for all the good the Giants did last week in Denver, I don't know if we'll be able to duplicate that again. I know it's not the Legion of Boom from a few years ago, and the Seahawks have their own offensive line problems, but I don't have the same faith in the Giants as Ron does. I think the Giants are one big dumpster fire from PDOT to Kim Jones, to Drew, to Eli, to everybody. And so give me the Seahawks game number two. Give me the six.
All right. Thanks for the picks, Andy. Let's now round it out with John's guest picks. That is John and Stanford. So Yachts, as we call him, has these picks for NFL Week 7. He begins with the Jets plus 3 at the Dolphins. If you remember, the Jets had a resounding win in the first matchup earlier this year at MetLife. This time they're going to be in South Florida for the rematch. Game two, he's going to go with a game that I thought somebody else could have by now, but no one has up to this point. He goes Patriots minus 3.5 against the Falcons. And as everyone was alluding to, Andy in particular, it's going to be a high-scoring game. It's going to be a lot of points. But John has it for New England. So to repeat, Jets plus 3 and Patriots minus 3.5 for John in Stanford's NFL picks. And that's it, guys. We've managed to finish relatively on time. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate having y'all back. Have a great time. Have a great rest of your week, and hopefully good things for the weekend and football and everything else. So, guys, take care, and we'll do it again next. Oh yeah, we won't be here next week, but 2 weeks from now, we'll see you guys soon. Take it easy, guys.
All right. Good luck, everyone.
See ya. Good luck.
All right, fellas. All right. Well, that's our program tonight. Good stuff. Thanks to Ron. Thanks to John. Thanks to Andy. Thanks to all the listeners. Thanks to John and Stanford, a.k.a. Yachts. Thanks to this entire experience. Guys, if you're looking for us, we're at DipCow on Twitter, www.dipcow.com. Or look for us on Apple Podcasts. Find us at Dave in the City Out West, DipCow. Hope you liked it. We'll see you next time.